turn your eyes upon Jesus. Look full in His wonderful face, in the face of earth will grow. His glory and
That's good advice in every
circumstance. Especially difficult circumstances. The one thing in that the one phrase in that chorus that I think I would clarify a little bit is, it says the things of earth will grow strangely dim. And I don't think it's turning our eyes on Jesus is necessarily an escape from reality. But I think it can put things in perspective and help with the overwhelming aspect of circumstances that are difficult, times that are difficult in our lives. If you have your Bible, Matthew chapter 7, verses 1 through 23, we're going to spend a little bit of time in that passage. In Mark. What did I say? Matthew? One of those books. So we'll try Mark. And I titled this sermon Focused On. In any passage, there are a lot of themes and things you can talk about in there. There's one underlying, this is what it says, but things you can draw out of it. And I wanted to look at focus. I think this passage, this text talks about focus. So I want to talk about that. And I'm going to break it into sections. But before that, I want to talk just about focus for a minute. Wow. So, didn't know we had a light show going, did you? Woo-hoo! So I spent more time on airplanes this year than in 2020 than I have spent in my entire life. I mean, we got on a plane in Redmond back in January and went to Salt Lake, and then we got on a plane in Salt Lake and went to Amsterdam, and then we got in a plane in Amsterdam and went to Rwanda and got on that plane and flew over to Entebbe, which is not very far, but that's how they did it. And then we got on a plane in Entebbe and flew to Amsterdam, and they got on a plane in Amsterdam and flew to, let's see, where did we go? Seattle. And then we got on a plane in Seattle and then flew to Redmond. And then in this past 2 weeks, Georgie and I got on a plane in Redmond and went to San Francisco, and then on a plane in San Francisco and went to, where we go? Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I learned how to pronounce it. It's not Fort Lauderdale, I found out. Fort Lauderdale. And then we got on a ship and went over 3,000 miles around the ocean. Then we came back and got on a plane in Fort Lauderdale and came back to Denver, and then we got on a plane in Denver and came back to Redmond. You ever, when you get on those planes, and you know it's a long ways to where you're going, you ever wonder if that pilot will get there? I mean, there's a lot of sky out there, you know, or you get on that boat, there's a lot of ocean. You know, it's a big big, you stand out there and you can't see anything, you know? But they do. They just go because they have a plan. The airlines have a flight plan, and they go from spot to spot, and they're focused in. They have technology that helps them with that. And sure enough, you take off from Salt Lake City, and after 10 or 11 hours of sitting with your knees cramped up next to Rich Newton, you land in Amsterdam, you know, and then the same thing to... That's the way it works. Well, the Bible says some things about focus and how focus can help us wind up. Well, we will wind up where we're focused, I guess. Exodus chapter 23, verse 3, it's in the Ten Commandments, says, "You shall have no other gods before me." This one God, that should be our focus. That's what Exodus says. Matthew 6:21, Jesus said, "Where your treasure is, your heart will be also." Where your it's kind of like what's most important to you. That's where, or me. That's where we're going to focus on whatever's the most important thing. Matthew 6:33 says, "Seek first God's kingdom and His righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well." It's kind of like everything falls. In a wake behind where we're headed with our focus. Hebrews chapter 3, verse 1, that writer said, "Therefore, holy brothers and sisters, fix your thoughts on Jesus, whom we acknowledge as our apostle and high priest." And Hebrews 12, 2, first part of that verse, he said, "Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith." That's what, for the Christian person, that's our focus on Jesus, on God through Jesus. Just keep that in mind. But in this lesson, in this text, Matthew 7, 1 through 23, is kind of a lesson on focus. At least that's one of the things you can draw out of it. And the first people we run into are the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, or called the scribes, might be the scribes in some of your translations. The Pharisees and some of the teachers of the law who had come from Jerusalem, they gathered around Jesus. And they saw some of his disciples eating food with hands that were defiled, that were unwashed. Boy, they wouldn't fly right now, would they? We'd keep have an eye on those buggers, I'll tell you that much. "The Pharisees and all the Jews do not eat unless they give their hands a ceremonial washing, holding to the tradition of the elders." Keep that phrase, tradition of the elders. "When they come from the marketplace, they do not eat unless they wash. And they observe many other traditions, such as the washing of cups, pitchers, and kettles." So the Pharisees and teachers of the law asked Jesus, "Why don't your disciples live according to the tradition of the elders instead of eating their food with defiled hands?" I want to do a little bit of explanation. Probably don't have time to go real deeply into it, but in the Old Testament, Leviticus, Numbers, for example, there are things that you shouldn't touch. They call them unclean. They're taboo. Taboo. Don't touch these things. So just put that up there. And then the scribes initially were, their job was to copy, make copies of the Bible, or you know, look at it, write it down, look at it, write it down. They were kind of like printers. Old-time printers. And so what they started doing is making rules to help us do what God asked us to do. For example, on the Sabbath, remember the Sabbath, to keep it holy, that's one of the commandments. Those are kind of a principle to figure out how to do that. Well, they would make a rule. Well, you can only walk this far on the Sabbath, and you can't do this on the Sabbath, and you can't do this kind of work on the Sabbath. And they had these rules. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, when I drive down the street, the speed zone when I get to the school says 20 miles an hour. That's the guideline. There's nothing wrong. Nothing wrong with that. That's an important thing. But then what happened with their rules is their rules became, what are you guys laughing about? It always,
it's not a guideline.
Well, no, drive safely would be a guideline. The law, the rule, the law is 20. All right, I got it. I got it. You know, that's what the fella that told me the other day with the lights and everything, too. So, I actually know a guy who used to be in this church who 55 miles an hour is a basic rule. It's a common sense rule, right? That's what he figured. Basic rule. Drive according to the conditions, but 55 is a basic rule. So he was doing 65. Come to find out, it was more of a law. He said, and he even went to court and tried to explain it, but it didn't help. So just so you know, if you're going to try that. Let's see, where were we? When people start laughing when I'm preaching, it unnerves me. So I said, what did I say? But then over time, the traditions became the law. They became more important than the law. And that's what he's talking about, the traditions of the elders. These guidelines, these rules they made to help us follow what God asked us to do. And so when Jesus talks about the tradition of the... So these guys are caught up, and there's all kinds of examples in their dealings with Jesus about this. This one happens to be about washing of hands. And they aren't talking about hygiene here. It's not about hygiene. I mean, right now, how long are you supposed to wash your hands for?
20 seconds.
Oh, yeah. 20 seconds. And ABCs?
Yeah. You're supposed to
sing the
ABCs. Come on, Ben, keep up.
Oh, you know, well, I'm sorry. I practice. I got to tell you the truth. I practice the ABCs often because that's the only way I can figure out where a letter is. A, B, C, D. So I didn't know that. Well, it depends on how, I mean, you can ask Chris, you could sing them faster than, or slower than 20 seconds, you know. But it's 20 seconds. What is that? A guideline. I got to tell you the truth. We want everybody to wash their hands, but we don't have a camera and a timer, and we don't have somebody in the bathroom, say, with a stopwatch doing that. You know, I mean, it's a guideline. Wash your hands, all right, with soap and water. All right, that's the kind of deal. And so that's what, the Pharisees, they weren't interested in whether Jesus' disciples' hands were clean. They were interested in the fact that he wasn't following the rule, they weren't following the rules. They were focused on the rules. That was their deal. And they were focused on use the rules to control people and situations. Their focus wasn't on what can we do to serve God. Their focus was on you better keep these rules. And they had in the Mishnah, it's written down in the Mishnah now, if you're familiar with Judaism, they were oral rules at that time. They have a gazillion rules. God had 10. They had a gazillion. And I don't know how many that is, but a gazillion is a lot. So that's what was going on. And Jesus replied, Isaiah was right when he prophesied about you hypocrites. As it is written, these people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. And that's really the bottom line. It wasn't the fact that it was wrong to do these ceremonial washings. But their focus was not on, their hearts weren't with God, their hearts were with the rules. As long as we keep the rules. And so it's an issue of their focus was wrong. Their focus wasn't on God. They worship me in vain, he said. Their teachers are merely human rules. Their teachings are merely human rules, rules we made up. 20 seconds. Who decided 20 seconds? I don't know, but it's a good guideline. But we don't got a guy in the, you know, by the sink with a stopwatch. You know, just wash your hands thoroughly. 20 seconds is a good guideline, but it's, you have let go of the commands of God and are holding on to human traditions. See, their traditions had become, a lot of traditions develop as helping us figure out how to follow one of God's principles. But then those become the law, the rule. And that's what's happened with these guys. I want to talk about, say, well, does that happen today? Oh, yeah. I want to talk about communion for a second. Now, we changed communion this morning. We used two cups, and we didn't take it as it passed by. And I hope that didn't bother anybody too much. It probably didn't. But I want to ask you a question. How often does the Bible say we should take communion? Whenever we meet? No. Okay, now see, we're going to get in an argument here. This could be really interesting. All right, as often as you will is on this side. Whenever you meet on this side, and on the Sabbath day? No, that's not what it says. It doesn't say, it doesn't actually, in a way, well, let's just read a couple things here. In the Christian church, I grew up and we take it every Sunday. We take it every Sunday. In Uganda, they don't take communion. Not very practical in the villages, I guess. When we had a pastor's conference, we did communion two different times. And these guys were like, it was four. We just wanted to introduce the thing. And there are people in our town. Well, George and I went to a church that did it once a quarter, I think, you know. So, well, who's right and who's wrong about this? Well, Acts chapter 2, 42 through 47. You can write these down. You don't have to look them up. I mean, you can if you want. Acts 2, 42 through 47. This is right after the church was kind of born. Says, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread, and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts. And we think probably when they broke bread that they also took communion. But it may have been a meal. Communion was more of a meal probably at that time. So what does that say? Well, it doesn't give a command. It does give an example. This is what they did. When they met day to day. Every day they met in their homes. And so if we follow that, or every time we meet, we should do communion on Sundays and at Bible studies and when we have friends over for dinner. And I mean, if we follow that to the letter of the law, that's probably what we should do. And then Matthew chapter 26, should have a little colon in there, 22 to 29. And Mark and Luke also tell us about, give us a picture into Jesus and the disciples taking that first communion. He doesn't say anything about how often to take it. Doesn't say anything about it. And in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, I think somebody said this. In 1 Corinthians, it says, Paul wrote, "For I received from the Lord what I also passed on to you. The Lord Jesus, on the night he was betrayed, took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, 'This is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me.' In the same way, after the supper, he took the cup, saying, 'This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this whenever you drink it in remembrance of me. For whenever you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes. What is that? Whoa, very cool. Maybe we should join them. So, what do you think? Says, whenever you do this, or what somebody said, it says, some translations, as often as you do this. So, what does the Bible say about when we should take communion? But see, what happens is, we get in these arguments. In the Christian churches that I grew up in, we thought we were right and everybody else was wrong, because they don't take communion every week, you know. And in other places, I go to meetings and guys say, wow, you guys take communion all the time. It can't possibly have any meaning. Why would you do that? Meaning, why would you? You know, we go on and on. Well, what's the deal? Is God through Jesus, gave us an ordinance and asked us to do it. He didn't tell us. He didn't give us all of those details. How often should you do it? We can decide. And we have. And it's okay to do it every week, biblically. And it's okay to do it once a quarter. And it's maybe okay not to do it at all, like they don't in Uganda. But what happens is then we get hung up on. I mean, I remember, I go with all those other churches, they're suspect. Because they don't do it every week the way the Bible says it should, like we do it. See, that's what was happening with the tradition of the elders. And you know what the main thing about communion that said, the real important thing, says, do this in remembrance. As often as you do this, whenever you do this in remembrance of me. Do it focused on Jesus. And then Paul, read that, 1 Corinthians 11, Paul goes on and talks about people who are taking communion. He says they're getting sick because they're taking it wrong. Not because they're not taking it at the right frequency, but because they're taking it with the wrong heart. The wrong heart. And so that's the kind of thing that Jesus was dealing with here. And so the Pharisees and teachers of the law, their focus was on the rules, not on Jesus, not on God. That's what Jesus was saying to them. And then Jesus continued, you have a fine way of setting aside the commands of God in order to observe your own traditions. Now this is an interesting thing. Moses said, honor your father and your mother. Honor your father and your mother. And anyone who curses their father or mother is to be put to death. That's one of the Ten Commandments. Honor your father and mother. That's what he says. But he says, say that if anyone declares that what might have been used to help their father or mother is Corban, if it's devoted to God, I would help mom and dad with this money, but I've devoted it to God. And I actually read in one commentary, I only found it one place, that you could devote things to God and put it in your will, so you could use it now, but then a percentage of whatever would go later to God, therefore I can't help dad and mom with it. That's what they were doing. These guys were, their parents, and there was no Social Security then, nothing to catch, no net, safety net, and so they were saying, sorry, I'd like to help you dad and mom, but, you know, I've devoted this to God. And so that was okay. And there's more about that. It's an interesting read. Good thing goes crazy on me. And he says, nothing outside a person can defile them. But I wanted to talk about this first. So do we do that? I mean, how do we do? How do we say, well, I could help somebody, but, you know. Well, there's a lot of ways perhaps we do that. One of them is, look at the time. I'd love to help you, but I've got an appointment. Well, I know we have to weigh those things, and I know time and appointments and our word are important. But, you know, and I have to think about this. You know, I'm not going like this, because I just said, well, I would have went and saw my mom, but a lot of important stuff going on. So we can do those things too. We can trick ourselves. We can fool ourselves. And if we do, maybe we're focused on the wrong things. That might be what Jesus is talking about there with them. But then he goes on. His bottom line is, he left the crowd. His disciples asked him about the parable. He said, are you so dull? I'm like, I had a professor who would do that to us. He used to say, there are no stupid questions. There are only stupid people. And that cut down discussion quite a bit. So don't you see that nothing that enters a person from the outside can defile him? We can worry about all this stuff out here. It doesn't go into their heart, but into their stomach. And then out of the body, in saying this, Jesus declared all foods clean. That's kind of an aside if we want to get into can we eat this or that. So Jesus declared, and Corinthians talks about that as well, all foods clean. He went on, what comes out of a person is what defiles them. What's in their heart? And he's not talking about our physical heart like that. He's talking about our focus, the most important thing to us. And then he gives us, there are things you can choose that can be your focus. Within a person's heart, that evil thoughts. And he gives a list, some sexual immorality, if that is our focus, theft is our focus, if murder, if we have a murderous, adultery, if all our focus is there, greed, it's mine, and I want more. Malice, if our focus is, you know, and I think we have to be careful in our political climate about malice. I think we can have opinions and should have opinions and should be informed, and we can decide what we think about what's best. But a lot of the stuff that you read and hear and see goes into malice toward people. Envy, oh, if I only had one of those. Slander, running down another person. If there's something to say, we probably should say it to a person, you know. And I look through this list. I wish it wasn't in there, actually. You start looking at this stuff and looking at yourself carefully. For me, at least, I can find stuff, you know. Arrogance. One of the arrogant things that happens in our culture is we look at other people and say we think they're stupid, or they should have done this or whatever. We think we're better than they are. And folly. I thought about this folly one, and I didn't want to think about it too long, just coming off a cruise. So I didn't. But so what is folly? Folly is, I think God says, enjoy your lives, have pleasure, all of that. But if enjoyment and pleasure and that whole thing is our focus, is the main thing, then I think there are things to think about. And there's a lot of other things that could go on this list. The question is, where is my heart? What do I focus on? And a buddy of mine told me, you know how to tell where your focus is, where your heart is, what your God is? I said, what? He said, look at your checkbook. I suppose it'd be debit card now, and your time schedule, where you spend your money and your time. That's, you know, well, we voted him out of the group, that guy, because we didn't like how he talked. But you know, something to think about. All those things come from inside and defile a person. That's what he's saying. And so we need to think about that, to think about those things. And we can see them, how focus can throw everything else out of whack, whatever it is, what to do. Matthew 22:36-40 gives a real simple focus. Simple. What did you say, Bryce? It's simple, but it's not easy. Simple, but it's not easy. Bryce said in a communion meditation, guy asked Jesus, what's the most important commandment? Meaning, what's the most important thing I could do? And Jesus said, all the law, everything, falls underneath these two. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. And the second he said is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. And so you say, what is my focus? How do I, you know, well, if we could, those are two pretty easy to understand as far as the concept things. They're principles. How do I love God with all my heart, mind, soul, and my strength? And how do I love my neighbor as myself? And how do I do that in a specific situation? If I want to love God with all my heart, mind, soul, and strength, to love my neighbor as myself, in a certain circumstance, what does that mean? My actions or my words or my whatever should be. I think if we could focus on those two things, the other stuff, I don't believe an ostrich approach to life. Life is real. Coronavirus is real. Political elections, presidential elections are real. People who have cancer, that's real. Things that happen with our kids or our parents or whatever, those are real. I don't think we stick our head in the sand and say, oh, I'm just focusing on God. I think we focus on God, on loving God and our neighbor, and we say, okay, God, how is best for me to conduct myself in this circumstance? How would you want me to do? What would you want me to do? That kind of question. I think that's the kind of thing that Jesus was trying to teach these guys. You know, you're so focused on the rules, you know, you're so focused on whether Mitch washes his hands for 20 seconds that you lose sight of the fact of what we're really trying to do, and maybe of, you know, we'll talk later. So that's pretty much what I wanted to talk about today. You know, I think we should, you know, I'll say it again. I think we need to take what goes on in our world seriously, and we should do our part, but not let us consume us. And not let us throw us off on some side road, but stay on God's road. You know, I mean, we like our pilots to do that. I mean, if we leave Redmond, we want to wind up in Amsterdam, you know. Well, this will help us wind up where God thinks it will help the most. And I believe God knows what he's talking about. So go ahead.